The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliates of Field Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now. Save big money
at Menards. Welcome to Spirits Podcast, a boozy dive into mythology, legends, and folklore. Every week, we pour a drink and learn about a new story from around the world. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Julia.
And this is episode 177, Supernatural, with Megan Fitzmartin.
Yeah, we originally planned on releasing this around the finale of Supernatural, but apparently the season's back end has kind of been postponed because of the world. So I think now's a good time to listen to it as any.
Listen, with so much of it streaming, it is always a great time to learn about the cosmology of Supernatural, which is truly what we talk about here, as well as the process of actually making a television show, which is freaking awesome. I have no idea what that is like. And Megan was so generous and fun and clearly loves this world. So it was really, really lovely.
Yeah. And Megan, as you will hear from the interview, is a writer for the later seasons of Supernatural.
So legit, guys, we went straight to the source.
We did.
We would also love to welcome straight to the source of our hearts, which is our Patreon supporters, Sarah, Ruby, James, Jesse, Andrea, and Tallulah. Thank you so much for joining. You are among the ranks of such distinguished patrons as our supporting producer level patrons: Landon, Nikki, Tyree, Megan, Deborah, Molly, Skyla, Samantha, Sammy, Neil, Jessica, and Phil Fresh.
As well as our legend level patrons: Diane, Stephen, Milena, Francis, Clara, Brittany, Josie, Kylie, Morgan, Bia Me Up Scotty, Audra, Chris, Mark, Mr. Folk, Sarah, and Jack Marie.
Incredible. We are so glad that you are all with us. We say it every week because it is true every single week. We can only do this as our jobs because of the support of our listeners, whether that is sharing the show with somebody new to help grow our listenership or supporting us on Patreon. And as you consider supporting the businesses and artists that you really love and helping to ensure that we can continue to do what we do, we really, really appreciate everybody who chooses to support us on Patreon.
Love you guys.
Julia, can you remind us what we were drinking in the morning recording we had here? I think Megan got up at 6 a.m. to talk to us.
Bless her. She's so good. We, of course, had some brunch cocktails. It wasn't the weekend, but brunch can be any day because time is fake. So personally, we love a beer mosa, as we've talked about on the show. All you need is like a light lager. You could use a shandy. You can use an IPA if that's your jam. And then just top it with a little bit of orange juice.
So good. I like a half and half beer to orange juice ratio if I'm feeling like I need to drink a bunch of them in a row. Or you could just do a little splash.
It's I like
just,
a little floater.
So configurable. So good. And Julia, your taste in drinks is so good. Can you tell us what else we should be watching, reading, listening to?
Yeah. So I'm still currently reading Ghost of Eden Park, which was my last recommendation. But I started watching Itaewon Class on Netflix. So it's another Korean drama. It's buck wild. You might remember my recommendation of Oh My Ghost a while back. Fantastic. But this is like a revenge story where a guy's life is basically ruined by this big restaurant chain owner. And so he makes it his life's work to surpass him. And so he does that by starting and opening up a pub in a really hip neighborhood in Seoul called Itaewon.
That sounds incredible, and I would love to watch it while doing jigsaw puzzles, which is my little secondary recommendation this week. I picked it up when I had a concussion last year, and it is very good for when you want to do something but not really think.
Excellent choice.
We are very excited to let you guys know that our scheduled live show at the Boston Museum of Science is now going to be a digital live show. We're going to be doing a virtual happy hour, still hosted by the Boston Museum of Science, and we will be giving you the same live show we were going to, which is Mythological Doggos in History.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I've been really enjoying the research that I did for it, and it's going to be an absolute blast. And plus, we have a signature cocktail for that, so that's going to be fun too.
We do. Everybody who bought tickets to the live show has gotten or will be getting very shortly a refund, and it's now free to attend. So all you have to do is register for the Eventbrite totally free in advance. That's at spiritspodcast.com/Boston. And the live show is happening on May 6th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern.
And we also want to remind you that you can support Multitude and get some cool stuff by signing up for the Multi Crew. You can get weekly episodes of Head, Heart, Gut. This month we are arguing what is the best ingredient in a BLT, which was a lot of fun, let me tell you.
You did a great job on behalf of bacon, Julia.
Thank you. I was going between lettuce and bacon, and I think I made the right decision with bacon. But and editor Eric, of course, took lettuce because he is always the champion of the least likely
the dark horse
to win. He loves a dark horse. And we also premiere stuff like our pilots for upcoming Multitude shows or stuff we're workshopping, such as Meddling Adults, which is hosted by Mike Schubert, where it is a competition to see who can solve the most children's riddles from stuff like Encyclopedia Brown. And they don't...
Shockingly hard.
It's very hard. I was in the pilot episode of that as well against editor Eric, and it was a challenge.
Yeah, so we dropped this to the Multi-Crew feed. So if you join the Multi-Crew for as little as $5 a month, you not only get a new weekly show from Multitude, but also you get first access and the chance to help shape and give feedback on new stuff Multitude is working on. We use the money from the Multi-Crew to pay for our studio and to help make sure that we have this kind of infrastructure of time and space and being able to make new things for you and for each other. So it is a really, really meaningful way to support all of Multitude and to fund new work from hopefully people that you like and shows that you really enjoy and want to see more of.
I also want to say another one of the benefits of joining at the $10 tier is you get access to our Finsta, where lately I have been providing how-to guides to make cocktails, and it's a lot of fun.
It is extremely exciting. All of the hosts have access and everybody has been adding to it. We also do a newsletter every other week. So we tell you like what we've been playing and give you screenshots from Animal Crossing and not posted on social media photos of our baking and cooking. So it's really a pleasure to know that folks like our work enough to support it, and not just to support what we make, but new things that we are working on. So that and everything else about all of the benefits you can get at the Multi-Crew is at multicrew.club. Without further ado, we hope you are well, and we hope you enjoy Spirits Podcast Episode 177, Supernatural, with Megan Fitzmartin. We are so excited to have Megan Fitzmartin on the show with us today. Megan has written for Supernatural and is an all-around Supernatural show guru, also the co-host of Wine and Comics, and the producer and writer for Red Rhino, which is a wonderful audio fiction show. Hey, Megan.
Hello.
If you like superheroes, Red Rhino is the show for you.
Thanks. Hi, guys. Happy to be here.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us very early from California.
From the LA. Yes, exactly. You guys get to hear my morning voice. Aren't you lucky?
I love a good morning voice. I find them much more sultry than my regular voice.
Well, I was also going to say, if we're talking about Supernatural, nothing says Supernatural more than like a deep growly voice. So, you know, it's on
exactly.
Point.
Everyone's got that that vocal fry, but in the hot man way instead of the quote unquote annoying female way. And,
right.
Anyway.
Exactly. Bringing it back, making it ours.
Megan, as a person who's used Tumblr, I know a bit about Supernatural, but I would love to hear from you, sort of like, if someone says like, what is that show you work on? What's it about? How do you answer that? What is the sort of like high level summary?
Man, I mean, if it's my mom asking, I generally say a show that you don't want anything to do with. Thank you very much. We made God. Bye. But beyond that, ultimately, it's a show about family. It's a show about, you know, these two brothers just kind of trying to live their lives after trauma and making the world a better place. And so, and, you know, the thing that I love so much about genre television, and like, you can see this in Buffy, you see this in Angel, you see this in Lost, even like the genre television does a lot of really good heavy lifting in terms of paralleling the emotional stories with the actuality. So like, for instance, comic books do the same thing where it's like, you're like, the world's gonna end. And like, that may be how you, the audience is feeling, but you know that that's not true. But there's something cathartic about seeing it happen in real time for this story and how people kind of overcome it. And Supernatural does the same thing, I think, with like, you know, dealing with trauma, dealing with identity, dealing with loss, dealing with grief. The show does a really good job of sort of grounding those emotions in a way that if you are like me and you don't know how to deal with your feelings, it explains it a little bit better.
Mood.
Yeah.
Big mood.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And that's a lot of what I definitely go to fantasy and science fiction for are sort of, you know, the maybe lens is fantastical, but the things that people deal with are really cathartic and really relatable.
Yeah, 100%. So, yeah, it just also helps that they're two attractive boys. So, you know, doing their thing.
That does help everything.
So many moody, filtered screen caps on my dash.
It's so great. The single man tier is just, it's peak.
It truly is so good. And it's amazing to have a cast that's been together for so many seasons. This is season 15, 16?
We're going into 15, yeah. 15's our last season.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. That is so many seasons. That is so many years of putting people to work. And I appreciate that as, you know, Hollywood and the industry as a whole are, you know, hit or miss when it comes to whether or not you're going to have work the next season.
It is the most consistent job in Hollywood, for sure. In that way, it was definitely a blessing. Like, there's a lot of, like, hard stuff that come out of that, but also some really good stuff that we've had. A lot of our crew has been on since the pilot, like, or since the second episode, depending. Yeah. So it's a really special.
That is wild.
It's a special thing, for sure.
So talking about the sort of longevity of the show and building a world and a story over that length of time, can you tell us a little bit about, like, the cosmology of the world? What is the sort of structure? I know we deal with angels, we deal with demons, you mentioned, like, the figure of God. So can you tell us a little bit about who we meet and sort of Supernatural's take on what all of this means and how they relate to each other?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I actually think that Supernatural is probably one of the... I'm not saying this from a biased perspective, and I understand it's going to come across that way. I think that Supernatural is probably one of the best, one of the most well-written shows for genre. And not just because, like I said, I'm biased towards it, but also because, like, looking at the early episodes and how it built the world is just a masterclass. Like, that pilot episode is probably one of, so, you know, whenever you're writing for television, you're always told to, like, go and look for other pilots to read, to study, because you at some point will have to write a pilot episode. And Supernatural is one of those pilot episodes that I tell everyone to read because it is just so tight. It's so perfect. And it also sets up the world really well. Like, not only do we see our character, like, not only do we get the, like, you know, victim of the week in the very first, like, 5 minutes of the show, which is what the structure ends up becoming for the rest of the show. The victim of the week for the first 5 minutes are our main characters. And so, like, we're now invested into this world, and we're also now invested in, like, I understand kind of it's just the wacky and weird that's happening here. And so, like, that first season is a lot about, you know, the lore stuff. It's a lot about, like, stuff that you tell around a campfire. And then, you know, you start to kind of pull back and you start to realize, oh, well, demons exist here. And, like, demons are the really big, like, surprise of the first season. And then, like, second season is when Supernatural jumped over to, it wasn't the WB and became CW. And so there's some really interesting, you can start to see some network notes, which are really interesting for me. But, like, then you start to kind of build the world out a little bit more. What does it mean that there are demons? That probably means that there's a hell. And, like, you pull back a little bit more and you see that there's a trickster god. You see that there's, like, all sorts of things. And then, you know, the big reveal for season 4, it kind of revitalized our entire show by introducing angels. And so it was kind of a slow burn in terms of just, like, building the world and building the mythology. I mean, because we didn't fully introduce, like, we talked about God, but we said that God was not present. We didn't fully introduce who God was until season 11.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about him, like, starting in season 4, even a little bit before that, but mostly in season 4. And then, but, like, just the incredible slow burn of world building, because I'm a person that, like, I want to tell everybody everything right off the top of my head. And so it's been
I have so many notes. Let me share them with you.
I know, exactly.
I have 100,000 words.
I've thought about everything. Let me prove to you that I have thought about everything for this world.
Listen, this is how money works, and it's really important that I tell you every single kind of coin and what the nut to coin ratio is.
Oh, boy.
I've created a whole language, and I would like to sing a whole song about it that will last a chapter and a half, Tolkien. But, I mean, which I,
yes,
you know.
Yes, correct.
Listen. Props to you. I will not be reading that song.
We recently did a interview with author Garth Nix.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of my favorite parts of that interview is we were asking him, and he was commenting on the Silmarillion.
Oh, yeah.
And we were like, well, would you ever want to write a book like that for one of your books? He's like, no, I'd rather just write a book.
Yeah.
Like, oh, damn.
I'd rather not,
shot, man.
My dude. Yeah. I'd rather not put all that work into it. Super valid. But yeah, I mean, like that, looking at it's an interesting lesson in prioritizing. So what was prioritized is the relationship of the boys, maybe a little bit more than the world itself. So what's really important is Sam and Dean and how they react to each other, how they relate to each other. And the world beyond that is only important as it relates to those boys.
Right.
Which is really cool, like, and just from a writing perspective, like, oh yeah, that's right, that's how you should do things.
Yeah, focusing on the micro and having the macro kind of exist in the background.
Right, exactly. And having it be informed by your characters, like making sure that the choices that you're making are always character choices rather than, you know, this is a cool world that I think that is really cool for world reasons. Well, cool, and it may be a really cool world, but I know that I'm probably not going to care about it until it is directly connected to somebody that I have begun to care about.
Totally.
I think it's really cool too, kind of hearkening back to what you were saying about the pilot and, you know, having the victim of the week, the monster of the week kind of thing, the first ones being, you know, the brothers. It's so, like, it just fits the Joseph Campbell's hero's journey so well, because you have to introduce those reluctant characters into the journey. And, you know, if you're just kind of joining them in media res, you're not as invested.
Yeah.
So I love that as an idea.
I'm telling you, one of the best pilots, like, hands down, from a pure structure perspective.
So when you guys are thinking about sort of emotional growth versus plot versus like world building and continuing to kind of raise the stakes and like expand the lens of the world, how do you approach writing individual episodes versus the whole season?
Our room is a little bit different than most rooms. We're not in it as much. We're with each other all day, all the live long day around each other. But it's interesting because to me, so much of it is about learning through osmosis and learning and like kind of adjusting the story as it relates to like, oh, I have this really cool idea. And then you start to think about it and you start to kind of talk through it with everybody. And then you start to say, okay, like, where do we want them to go? We look at it almost in parts. That's always how I've been kind of taught to do television, is that we look at the season, not to have it at the very, like, not to have the end goal be where you're going. Like, I don't, this season's a little bit different because this is the last season. And so we did have to kind of figure out how we're going to end it. But for most seasons, you know, we don't really know what that end's going to look like yet. Definitely not when we start. And which is also just like, part of television that's really cool is that so much of television, and the cool part of television or collaborative storytelling, is leaning into the strengths of the people around you, not just your other writers, but also your actors and also the crew and also post, and like, what's the cool thing that everyone can bring to the table. And sometimes that story changes depending on like, oh, I really like this actor. This actor has been doing really like, in season 12, we introduced Lucifer's child. Like, somebody got pregnant with Lucifer's baby, because sure. And
classic.
You know, as you do. And to her credit, didn't know that it was Lucifer. So, whatever. Also, apparently.
They usually don't.
Also, apparently the first time Lucifer had sex, we're unclear. Anyway.
Okay. You would think that Lucifer would be like getting it down more.
Apparently, you know? Not. He was quite surprised by it. But then she's an amazing actress, Courtney Cox. She's on Legends of Tomorrow now. But she gave birth to basically Lucifer's son, who was about, you know, a 20-year-old man. And he His name is, the actor's name is Alex, and we love him. And we weren't sure. Like, we weren't sure if we were going to love him. We weren't really sure if he was going to, like, how he was, what he was going to bring to the character. And just, we, the more that we saw him on screen, like, in the dailies and things like that, we were like, oh, great, we can write towards this because he's phenomenal. And it's also awesome. The same thing that happened with, like, Misha Collins. Like, Misha Collins came on season 4 and wasn't planning to be, like, he was the introduction to Angels into our world, and that was kind of it. But he was just flawless at it. Like, he was just truly, it truly felt like he belonged on the show, same like Alexander Calvert. So it's, you know, you lean into that too with storytelling. And that's, I think, another part of what we do in our stories is that, like, we lean into it, we see what works, what doesn't, but then we also, like, we know these characters super well. Where do they need to go? What emotional things do we owe? And also, how can we tell a cool story? So, like, any combination of those things ends up making the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very curious about the demonology and the hierarchy of angels and stuff in the show, because, you know, demons and angels, there's a lot of canon about them in Christianity.
Right.
But then you guys introduce stuff like trickster gods and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. I'm curious as to, like, where you draw the line versus, like, sticking with the canon versus creating something new entirely. I'm just curious about that process because it always fascinates me.
I think something that we enjoy doing on the show is looking at the canon and saying, how can we bring something new to it, or how can we surprise an audience? Something that whenever I first got on the show, I liked the show already, and so I had watched all the episodes, and so whenever I got on the show, I was like, I want to keep learning. I'm going to read all of our episodes, and which we're over 300 now. It was a feat. It was like a long process.
That's so many episodes.
So many scripts. But one of the things that I was really impressed by is that the thing that Supernatural did really well at the very beginning and kind of spoke to what the rest of the show would look like is that it utilized audience expectation and therefore could subvert it. So the example that I always kind of give is if you see a woman running in the woods, like a woman in a white nightgown running in the woods, that's one page worth of writing, but you've already told a story and you've already set up expectations for the audience. Like, that's so much work that was done with just writing one page of the story. And then what you do, knowing full well that your audience is going to expect that girl to be the, like, victim of the week, you turn it around and make her the werewolf. And that, you know, it's building off of the, like, expectations. It's building off of, it's knowing the myths, it's knowing the religion, it's knowing the backstory and saying, how can we subvert this narrative? Which in itself leads really well into why Supernatural, I think, is a very funny show and also a very meta show, because it's always been meta. Like, you look at some of the early episodes and you see how it's always kind of been very aware of itself, which is what a meta show needs to do. It's always been able to say, oh, okay, this is that. This is, we're going to change the format on its head, and therefore we are going to be a meta show. Like, you just can't not. And so it's the same thing with, like, vampires. Vampires on our show are very different than vampires of lore. And it's in part because, especially if you're telling a story and you're telling a story to an audience that, like, for the most part is fairly horror suave, like they're savvy. Right. They know what you're talking about. How do you spin it on their head? And so that was that's the precipice. The same thing with angels. So, like, one of the jokes is that angels are dicks, which is the opposite of what you would think of an angel. And so just kind of taking the expectations and just turning them on the head, like turning them on its head, is just something that I think that we do for a lot of our mythology is like, oh, okay, this is what you're expecting, which is good. Like, that's what you should be expecting. That's kind of what the narratives thus far have taken you. How can we subvert that?
Is there a piece of the lore from the show that is your favorite piece of the lore?
I don't know. I love the way that we do lore. I love the way that we I love the way that it asks questions. I think a lot of lore, I think that the difference about our lore that is different, because lore in general, right, is supposed to answer questions that are strange for people. Like, why did my crops die? Oh, well, I'm probably upset some god. That's the only reason that the crops died. Mm-hmm. Not because there was no rain. And or like whatever reason. Like the lore was always built to answer a question. And I think what I love about our lore, it actually exists more in the gray area. Like our lore exists to ask mm-hmm. questions. Our lore exists to say, okay, you know, we have a werewolf character, Garth, who's great. He's played by DJ Qualls. What if one of our characters that we love and know become a monster? Well, what do you do then? Do you kill them still? Or do you try and exist within that? It's the same thing with God. It's the same thing with angels. Like they are supposed to be the good guys. What if they're the bad guys? But also demons are bad guys. What we ask the question a lot about free will. And I think that that's something that I love so much about our show. And in terms of the lore almost always exists to ask questions rather than to answer them.
I really like that. Thank you. That's a great answer. Yeah.
And I mean, I imagine that that opens up so many possibilities for you all writing wise as well.
Yeah.
Because there's so much pressure, as I know myself from like trying to write novels, you know, for NaNoWriMo. Like,
yeah,
there's so much pressure to answer every possible question that at least I felt as a writer, and to like make something that is so airtight that no matter what question someone asked about it, like there would be a really logical answer. But approaching it from like, how can we, you know, open the world, pose a question, like raise some stakes, you know, make you look at what you know differently. That's just like intriguing and exciting.
Absolutely. This is what's interesting to me. And I deeply love stakes. I need every story to have stakes, as I think most people do. But I also love False Jeopardy. I think False Jeopardy is so interesting, especially for a writer, because
what is that?
False Jeopardy exists primarily for our show, where you don't die. Like, what's the worst thing that could happen? Because you're never gonna die. Like, our boys have died so many times. Like, what's the point?
My boys die all the time.
My sweet, sweet boys are just always dead at some point, some way. Someone always dies. So how do you, when your characters have died so many times, superhero narratives also have the same issue when, you know, you have, and I actually read, this is maybe a side tangent, but like I read an article by one of my favorite comic book writers. His name was Mark Waid, and he was writing Flash at the time. And he was talking about how, you know, how do you add in Jeopardy? Because I think it was like, it wasn't even a Wally West book, like it was Barry Allen's book, but Wally West was there and whatever, whatever. And he had inserted the False Jeopardy of, you know, Wally West has twin girls twin children, and they were going to die. And so the premise was that Wally had to save his twins before they die, essentially. But you as the reader know that they're not going to die. It's not their book. Like, if this were their book, then maybe we'll be sad. But like, also, who dies in a comic book story? Like, how does that, like,
right.
Yeah. Even if you die, you're going to come back. How do you add any sort of jeopardy to it? And the thing that Mark Waid said was, ultimately, he got to the point where he like, there's a moment at the end of the story where, you know, he saves the day. Woo, everything's fine. But he's off in the corner during the party, and his wife, Linda, comes over to him and she says, well, why, you know, you should be celebrating. Why are you upset? And Wally goes, because I chose. In that moment, I chose which of my children I would save. And now I have to live with that.
Oof.
And like, that's what's so cool about it. Like, that to me is the beauty of False Jeopardy, is saying, okay, you're right. Like, those stakes, the killing stakes are not interesting because we've done that so much on stories. Like, we've made it a joke. Do you know what I mean? Whereas what's interesting then is, how are you emotionally affected by this? And I think that for our show is something that I love so deeply, is that like, it's not actually about who dies. It's who lives and how you're affected by it. Like, what is the emotion? How are you emotionally growing and emotionally affected by these stakes that don't seem to be stakes, but are in fact damaging something else, I think.
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things as a writer is understanding that there are fates worse than death.
Right.
And finding out what that is for the character that you're writing is really, really important. Mm-hmm. I always think of, as a great example of that, Griffin McElroy in the Suffering Game arc of The Adventure Zone.
Yeah.
Just being able to pick out exactly what, like, emotionally tolling things he could do to really impact those characters
exactly.
and make them decide.
Affected both them and me specifically. Like, that's my favorite mm-hmm. arc of yes. The Adventure Zone. And it's so much so that I have two rings that signify from that space that are two spins. Like, I love that. And it's exactly the reason you're talking about.
Oh, love that. Oh, God, that's so cool.
I know. I think I never succeeded as a fiction writer because I just don't want to make anyone suffer. Like, it's just extremely challenging
it's
for me.
Really, I can only write ho-punk.
Yeah.
It's really hard. It's a thing that I've been trying to push myself more and more because, yeah, you're right. Like, I look at the way that some people treat their characters and I'm like, why would you do that? but you have to. You gotta. They'll be fine. Yeah. They're fake.
Gotta raise those stakes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and like give them a chance to grow and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
We are sponsored this week by Stitch Fix. I know that I would really love it if every clothing store had like a bunch of options in a bunch of different sizes and knew the colors that I liked and looked good in and also let me try things on in the comfort of my own home and then send back whatever didn't work. So Stitch Fix is focused on making all of that happen. Fashion changes, but true style doesn't. So you can help build timeless looks that work again and again by working with a Stitch Fix styling expert who learns your tastes, what you like, what you're looking for, the kinds of clothes that you already own to make sure that whatever you get goes well with what you have. And they also have like consistent sizing. So they negotiate that whole business of like a medium at this one store is not a medium at another store. So you give them your sizes and they send items that they know will work for you.
Amanda, what have you been loving lately from your Stitch Fix collection?
I've just rotated out some of my spring and summer clothes, and I have a green dress from Stitch Fix last year that I got for a convention, and I really love it because it's extremely comfortable, but also looks a little bit fancy. So I can really just, you know, appear to be way more together in my video chats than I actually am.
I've seen it. It's very cute.
Thank you. And everybody, you can try Stitch Fix for yourself at stitchfix.com/spirits to get 25% off when you keep everything in your Fix. So if you keep anything at all from your Fix, the $20 styling fee is applied toward whatever you keep. Shipping and exchanges are always free. They're also very easy. And if you end up keeping everything in your box, you'll get 25% off by going to stitchfix.com/spirits to sign up.
Yeah, and the best part is there's no subscription required, and you can schedule them for any time. Again, that's stitchfix.com/spirits for 25% off when you keep everything in your Fix. Amanda, things have been depressing lately. It's been a little bit rough out there.
It has been.
And I am looking for content that is not going to make me feel even more isolated than I already do. And that is why I am really, really grateful for Our Play Gear. This is a new kind of current events podcast from Joseph Fink of the Welcome to Night Vale fame and Alice Isn't Dead. It is an island in a sea of bad headlines. It's this sort of experiment in public anxiety. And like, it's been a scary year, but I realize now that I don't have to be scared alone.
It's really powerful. You acknowledge your anxieties, you acknowledge the fact that it's extremely uncertain, but doing it with others, there's just something really powerful about it.
Yeah. So Joseph and other prominent writers like Cory Doctorow, Niecy Shaw, Night Vale's Jeffrey Craner, they document this year as it is lived week by week, the big and the small, the tragic and the funny. And alongside that, they also feature regular voicemails from listeners who are describing their own extraordinary and also kind of ordinary moments. And their plan is together they can tell the story of this really buck wild year and live through it.
Absolutely. And if you like, you know, the empty bowl and the listener voicemails that come in that, or if you like the hilarious world of depression where listener letters make up a big part of the show, I really love hearing from other people and knowing that I can count on a space that doesn't try to cover up what's happening, but also isn't dwelling in anxiety. So you can find Our Plague Year anywhere that you get your podcasts.
Or go to nightvalepresents.com/ourplagueyear.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change.
offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh. You're in the madhouse now.
And now let's get back to the show. Just given the timing of when we're talking to you, do you want to speak a little bit about endings and what makes a satisfying one? Kind of what's on all of your minds or was on your minds as you approached kind of storyboarding and then executing the season?
Well, I mean, we're a 20 episode show, so our ending is so far away. Everyone's asked me. So it's October when we're recording this, and everyone's been asking me that, like in my friend group and whatnot. Are you sad? Are you sad the show's over? And I was like, when is it ending though? Like, what are you talking about? We're not anywhere close to ending.
It's a lot of work to
do. We're on episode like 3 right now.
Exactly. We've got so many more episodes. I'll be sad in January, I think, is when I...
That's fair.
Do you know what I mean? Because I think that our last shoot is going to be like in April or something like that. So that, as that mm-hmm. gets closer, I think that I will feel a type of way. But yeah, in terms of endings, like it's funny you brought up the Adventure Zone, because I just listened to that for the first time last year. And that mm-hmm. ending is so well done. And I'd been thinking a lot about endings and what makes a good ending. And I hate ending stories. My friends make fun of me because mm-hmm. I haven't seen the last episode of most shows that I love.
Oh, I just watched the end of Parks and Recreation.
Okay, good.
It took me a good few years.
I feel better about that then. That makes me feel I haven't watched the end of Battlestar. I haven't watched the end of the third season of Veronica Mars, and I have watched season 4, but I won't watch the end of Veronica Mars.
It's different.
It's hard. It took me, one of my favorite shows was the Justice League animated show. And I think it took me 4 years.
So good.
Oh, so good. And I think it took me 4 years to watch that last episode because we were going to record over the VHS tape. And I was terrified I was never going to get to see it because this was before streaming.
Oh, no.
Yeah. but I mean, yeah, in terms of endings, it's figuring out how do you emotionally resonate, and also being okay, I think, with the fact that no one's going to be okay with the end.
But Megan, I want everyone to like me so much.
So much. Oh man. Can I just tell you that working on Supernatural has really killed that in me? The internet has some strong opinions about me one way or another, which is fine.
Whoa.
Yeah.
The internet always has strong opinions about everything. That's the problem.
Truly. Yeah. Truly.
And something someone loves so much. Like, ultimately, it is a testament to your work that somebody cares enough about it to feel really invested. But the emotional experience of someone saying that all your work is, like, wrong and also specifically bad.
Oh, yeah.
It's real.
It's honestly, like, I don't know. I've come around on it because I'm like, this is really beautiful. Like, the amount of passion that it inspires. Like, the thing that actually is more terrifying is when somebody is apathetic towards my show. And then I'm like, oh, you... Oh,
yeah.
You hate mm-hmm. it. If you hate me, that's fine. But yeah, I mean, there's so much that's sweet about our show, and it becomes, I think it's the nature of shows nowadays because of social media. You know, you are in this with the people that have watched you and been supportive of you for so long, and so trying to figure out a way to not be Game of Thrones is
ideally
is definitely on everyone's mind. But also just at the end of the day, what it has to come down to is what's best for these characters. Going back to the first episode, I recently rewatched the first season because I wanted to kind of see what we had promised all the way back in season 1.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether or not that was the intention, you make promises as a storyteller at the very beginning of your show. And it's important to see whether or not that you've how are you going to fulfill those promises or make those promises different, like subvert the promises. Because I feel like How I Met Your Mother is a show that like tried to hold on to those promises a little too tightly.
Oof.
Yeah. And how do you grow with the show? How do you accept that the show has grown? Is you know, it's a lot. I really love our ending. I've heard it every time I've heard it, I've cried.
Good sign.
Good. I mean, hopeful. I also just like care deeply about these people, and I'm excited about it. I'm excited. Not that it's ending, because I hate anything ending ever. But I'm super honored to be a part of a thing that has mattered to me a lot. To be able to like be in the room and just watch as people very respectfully try and figure out the best way to lay these characters to rest, you know, to utilize the Carrie on My Wayward Son of it all.
Was there anything else that you wanted to touch on?
Something that I think that we do that I enjoy is I have a religion degree because I was going to be a youth pastor, which is a fun party conversation topic that I bring out whenever I feel uncomfortable.
So did our editor, Eric.
Oh, no way.
And now you both work on mythological shows,
yeah.
Which I think is very apt.
I think so, too. And that's the thing that I always actually really appreciated about Supernatural. Even before I worked on the show, I loved the way that it's hopeful. And I love the way that it took religion. Like, it takes the heart. Like the heart behind religion, it may not be because we don't necessarily do a lot. We have done a couple of times, like we've done gods and goddesses. There's one particular episode in season 5 we did like a whole bunch of gods. That's pretty good, but we don't delve into it a lot of time, which is fine. It's just the way that it's what works for the show and what doesn't. But I love kind of the heart behind all of the times of using religion. It was so interesting to me to like be a kid that was like in the South growing up very religious and seeing this show, like how their takes on religion has always been really interesting. And so to be able to kind of like add in my own two cents has been fun. Because I love a good, we don't really have them anymore. Kind of the like, what you guys talk about in terms of the past lores and past spiritualities and things like that. Like, we're this particular time that we exist in, we've already kind of accepted one thing or another. We've already accepted like the religion, and we've already accepted whatever, and we don't have new versions of it. And so I think our new, like, quote unquote new versions are television. And to see the kind of mythos that's created within that is been really interesting and fun, and how it takes things that like I grew up with within religion and explains it even better to me.
Yeah, I love that. And that's such a cool opportunity to be able to be a part of the ongoing mythos.
Yeah.
Yeah. And from a fan perspective, too, I like the things that a show or a book or a text like gestures at, but doesn't necessarily explain.
Right.
Like having one episode where a bunch of gods and goddesses are introduced, that gives like, that's like a whole tag on AO3. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's a whole kind of corner of the world that people can build out and explore for themselves.
Exactly.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. 100%. Letting people kind of exist and live with their own spaces, which is also, I think, part of world building, like you were talking about before. Like being able to say, yeah, that's part of this world. This world does exist within that, but we can't focus on that right now. That's for you and AO3 or you and other spaces to kind of play around with. And that's really cool and magical.
Hashtag Marauders era, am I right?
Yes. Truly.
Well, Megan, thank you so much for coming on bright and early before your workday starts to speak with us about Supernatural and writing and endings and all of the amazing things that we touched on. So please let our audience know where they can reach you and where they can, I don't know, delve more into Supernatural.
Oh, man. Well, Supernatural is all on Netflix for who knows how much longer, because the streaming wars are nigh upon us. So watch.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Not looking forward to that. But it's all on Netflix and also on DVD. We're one of the few shows that like still continues to put out DVDs, mostly because there's so many of them and people started a collection like 14 years ago. They don't want to stop. So Yeah, we're around. I am on Twitter at MegFitz89. I'm on Instagram as that. I'm on pretty much every form of social media as MegFitz89. And then Wine and Comics is on Twitter at Wine and Comics. Red Rhino is Red Rhino Pod. Yeah, check me out. Check everything out. Come hang out. I talk a lot about Supernatural and a lot about stories and, yeah, and cry a lot, basically. That's just all I do.
That's the internet for you.
You're right.
You're so good and also relatable on Twitter, which I really appreciate.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Awesome. Well, Megan, thank you so much. And listeners, whether you're in heaven, hell, or somewhere in between, remember,
stay creepy.
Stay cool. Thank you again to our sponsors. At stitchfix.com/spirits, you can get 25% off when you keep all of the items in your box. And Our Plague Year is a new podcast from Joseph Fink of Welcome to Night Vale, available in any of your podcast players or nightvalepresents.com/ourplagueyear. Spirits was created by Amanda McLaughlin, Julia Schaffini, and Eric Schneider, with music by Kevin MacLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Keep up with all things creepy and cool by following us at Spirits Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. We also have all of our episode transcripts, guest appearances, and merch on our website, as well as a form to send us your urban legends at spiritspodcast.com.
Join our member community on Patreon, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, for all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff. Just $1 gets you access to audio extras with so much more available too. Recipe cards, director's commentaries, exclusive merch, and real physical gifts.
We are a founding member of Multitude, a collective of independent audio professionals. If you like Spirits, you will love the other shows that live on our website at multitude.productions.
And above all else, if you liked what you heard today, please share us with your friends. That is the very best way to help us keep on growing.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.